the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Everybody, and welcome to the Open Paddock Podcast. Sean joining you this week after a very tiring week, lots of moving and stuff of the paddock headquarters. Joining me this week is Doug. Say hello, Doug.
Hello!
Yes, our other compatriot Michael is out in the mountains again. If you listen to this show on a regular basis, you know that Mike is much into the camping and the hiking. He's went out into the wilderness again, and hopefully he will not be caught up in a wildfire or grizzly bear ravaging. So we need him back next week.
Yeah, if you've ever seen me at the track, you know the only thing I've ever hiked to is the fridge to get another beer.
Nice, I like it. Well, you know, I'm so skinny because I drink vodka. It has less calories, and I also still burn calories when I walk to get the vodka from the freezer. So,
oh, there you go.
That's why.
Well, and it's cold, so you're burning calories warming the beverage up, right?
Indeed. So that is why I look the way I am, and I wouldn't change it because I'm all for the vodka.
So, drink cold vodka.
Yes, I even got a recommendation. Mindy from Indy. That's kind of funny. Whom I hung out with at the track during the 500. She told me about Kettle One Orange. And I'm usually kind of about flavored vodka, but I like Kettle One. And orange sounds not too froofy. So I will, I'll try it with a Sprite.
Did they make a bacon-flavored one?
I hope not. Because last time I had bacon-flavored vodka, I almost puked the first time ever on vodka.
That was some seriously nasty stuff.
Yeah, that was terrible. I don't know whose idea that was, but that was not a good idea on paper.
I have to own up to that one. I saw the Bacon-tini on Food Network. I'm like, ooh, bacon and alcohol. I like both of those things.
Surely they're good together.
No, it was that was so wrong.
It did. It tasted like drinking a cigarette.
yeah, it pretty much did. Yeah, so, it's an apt description.
Well, we have lots to cover in just a short amount of time, so let's get into it. We just came off of Texas, and we're already going into Milwaukee this weekend, but we'll talk about Texas first. Justin Wilson, given Dale Coyne Racing, its second ever win, and Justin Wilson's first one in an oval, and also that would mean that it's Dale Coyne's first one in an oval because, well, the only time Dale Coyne wins is when Justin Wilson drives his car.
I was going to say, the Dale Coyne Racing's first win in the IndyCar series came with Justin behind the wheel. I believe that was at Belle Isle, wasn't it?
No, that was Watkins Glen.
Watkins Glen was Ryan Hunter Ray with Ray Hall Letterman.
Pretty
racing.
Sure it was Watkins Glen. Let me Google it. I mean, everybody's probably at home yelling right now. It
yes.
was Watkins Glen.
They're yelling, Betty.
Yeah, I will bet you on this one. I'm rather confident.
What do you want to do?
I will bet you a six pack of Boulevard.
Oh, nice. I like this. Okay.
So let's see. I'm gonna go to the all knowing, and let's see. We could both be wrong, and everybody could laugh at us and make fun of us.
We owe every one of our fans a six-pack of Boulevard?
I'd get them a beer. I'd get them a six-pack. maybe not everybody a six-pack, but...
We would share one in their honor.
Indeed. I like that better. I can taste it. So, okay, so let's see. Still looking for it. So let's talk about the racing while I look for it. The racing was good. That was one of the big things that we were going to be talking about. They lessened the downforce and, you know, made drivers actually, lift in the corners.
have to drive the car
drive
and be uncomfortable.
Yeah, did you see the amount of negative lock and everything that was going on?
Oh yeah, there are some evil looking cars out there.
Dario
really look like a handful.
Yeah, Dario Franchitti and J.R. Hildebrand, I know they showed in-car cameras, and holy cow, that was madness.
It was like me, you know, driving on Gran Turismo 5, just sawing at the wheel back and forth, you know.
Yeah, you're like, oh my goodness, help me out. So, actually, that's incorrect information. Hold on. Anyways, yeah, it was really crazy, honestly, the amount of just trying to get the car to go straight through the corners. I mean, they were completely turning the car the opposite way. I mean, Scott Dixon, he hit the apron, which was
yep.
the cause of his incident, but he also spun into the wall, and that was bad. I mean, Charlie Kimball, he had just lost it and went into the wall. So,
what was really neat, as the drivers were talking after the race, one of the things that I thought was very cool is that the dynamics of the car, how the car behaved, changed dramatically
mm-hmm.
over the course of a stint. Right at first, full fuel and fresh tires. They were saying they were able to go just about flat around there, in that as the tires fell off and as the fuel load lightened, so as the normal force on the rear tires diminished with the diminished fuel load, that at the same time, the coefficient of friction goes away because the tires are degrading. The rear end just becomes increasingly more and more unstable
mm-hmm.
Over the course of the stint, which means the car gets more and more evil, and twitchy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the cool things for me watching was how the drivers managed their ever-changing cars.
Oh, yeah.
How they were able to rapidly adapt lap after lap to how the dynamics were being affected by the various changing conditions. Keep in mind that this race started off in the right before sunset, right?
Yes.
So throughout the course of the race, you also had a track that was cooling off. So all kinds is changing, and watching people have to adapt to all these things and actually do so in a car that you had to drive. They couldn't just go straight into the corners. They had to lift. And I also noticed that that they still preserved a multi-groove racing there at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't evolve to there's one and only one line.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that at some ovals, and it's dreadful. But you had multiple grooves. Some were more preferable than others, depending upon where you were in your stint. But anyway, it was great, exciting racing without the pack racing. And that's what everybody was wanting to get away from.
Mm-hmm.
The giant wads of cars that basically scared everyone, and for good reason, as we saw last year, right?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
And so seeing great battles on track, good duels between skilled drivers, but, only two, maybe three at a time. Never a wad of six or more or something like that. So we've gotten away from the pack racing while still keeping the good, intense oval battles. I think they hit the formula exactly right.
Oh, I think so too. And I know a lot of people were complaining about it being boring. I don't see how you can call that boring. Yeah, people called it boring. I think that came from the I think that was a disgruntled CART contingent who was mad that IndyCar actually got the oval formula right for once. But
wow.
I guess people just don't enjoy watching people drive cars.
Well, I remember seeing on Twitter someone who I know was a huge CART fan, big on the twisties, was never into ovals per se. Said this was some of the best racing, oval racing they had ever seen. We're
nice.
Really enthused by it. So, that Don't want to throw all the
fans
under the bus there.
Nope.
I'm surprised that there was someone who said that was boring. That was one of the coolest races ever.
Yeah, I thought it was really fantastic. I thought watching the drivers drive the cars.
Well, that happened on a couple of occasions.
Yeah, Charlie. but yeah, it was great racing to watch. And I thought, you know, it got rid of a lot of the stereotype as well that IndyCar, you know, passes 70,000 times a lap. You know, I thought all the passes during this race were meaningful. And I thought, you know, there was not an excess of the passing. I thought it was just the right amount to clear that.
You didn't see that slingshot type of stuff that we saw in Indy.
No.
You know, I'm not so sold on the slingshot pass.
Yeah.
As being exciting. No, it really isn't. You know,
no, it is if Sato's behind you and then dive pops you into corner number one.
And then you chop him off.
Yeah, then you wait a second.
Deep in your heart, you know it.
No, I will not.
Your feelings, you know it to be true.
No. Oh, by the way, transition of topic here. You owe me a six pack. Because it says,
hey, what?
You owe me a six-pack that we just bet on. On July 5th, 2009, Justin Wilson earned Dale Coyne Racing their first win by winning the 2009 Camping World Grand Prix at the Glen at Watkins Glen International. The British driver dominated the race, leading 49 of 60 laps. It was Coyne's 58th career start as an owner or as a driver. So I will take that.
Where did you see that?
I will not reveal my sources. However, I can say it starts with a W and ends with a Pedia.
I'm checking this right now.
You go for it. I know I'm right. I knew I was right. I never doubted myself. I only pretended to doubt myself so that you would
be a
false sense of security and actually bet me beer. But
I could have sworn Wilson won at
Belle Isle,
yeah, when Elio chopped him, blocked him. And that removed Elio from the win that particular race.
You talking about Belle Isle or Edmonton?
No, Belle Isle.
Mm.
Yeah, and because when the Edmonton thing happened, I immediately thought of the Belle Isle incident.
Hmm. Must have been somebody else, or it might have been, I don't know. That's just what it says.
You can't believe what you read on Wikipedia.
Well, I can go to their source listing on the bottom. That's what I do for my homework. I read it all on Wikipedia, and
no,
I go to the references, and then I use the references.
I rag on Wikipedia, but really, yeah, it's usually good stuff.
All right, well, let's move into what happened after the race, because a couple days, actually, well, there was two things, and we'll talk about what happened immediately after the race, and that was Tony Kanaan and Will Power exchanging words after Will Power threw a nasty block on TK towards the end. And good call by Bo Barfield to make that call, because I assure you, if Barnhart's in power in race control, that call's not made. Especially after the
point, he made it immediately. Bam.
Yeah. Well, I'd say it was about four laps. It was immediate if you think, you know, if we're talking relative here, where Formula One takes 2 days to put together a penalty or something like that. But, you know, it was like four or five laps went by and they were kind of talking about it, and the TV crew was ragging all over the fact that it should happen. And then, finally, you know, Tommy Kendall was the one who was really advocating for a penalty. And then Bo Barfield made the announcement over the radio for the drive-thru, which I thought was the right call. I thought it was silly I thought it was a bit dangerous. I understand probably in the heat of the moment why he did it, but at the same point in time, you have to be, you're a professional racing driver, and you can't be doing that, especially on a track like that, after all the stuff that we've, again, just talked about. Not always the best course of action to take somebody out, or try it, or, you know, block somebody like that and nearly take them out. So,
okay, I'm going to go back to the, I have to vindicate myself here. Okay. I'm going to go back to our bet.
Okay.
And yes, I do owe you a six pack.
Yes.
However, Justin Wilson did win his first race in the IndyCar series at Belle Isle in 2008, but he wasn't running for Dale Coyne. He was running for Newman Haas.
Which was Champ Car, wasn't it?
No. That's when, he and Graham Rahal were, he was in the 02 and Graham was in the 06. And Graham that year won at St. Petersburg in the rain, if you remember.
Where did you look this up? What is your source?
IndyCar.
Well, I guess it doesn't get any more true.
And so, you know, yeah, later that year, Camping World, yeah, Ryan Hunter Ray, later that year, racing for Rahal Letterman, or just Rahal Letterman then, in the number 17, the ethanol car, he won his first race there. So that was the year previous. You were thinking 09, I was thinking 08, but Justin Wilson wasn't with Dale Coyne that year, so that's why I had it twisted around. So I still owe you a six pack. I'm not going to back out of that. However, I just wanted to bring out that I wasn't blowing complete smoke out of my rear. So
nice. Yeah, that's interesting.
So anyway, yeah, power.
And going forward, I've completely lost it.
Power, big, huge block, and Tony wasn't real happy. Did you see the words they had after the race?
Yeah, they were. He said that he was that it was foolish that, you know, they preached all of the safety, and then he goes and does a block like that. You know, he was not happy at all with Will.
No. I was waiting for the fisticuffs almost. Oh,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it looks like it. It certainly did look like it, but it was just, you know, I don't know. I don't think, I can understand Kanaan's frustration because he hasn't won a race in kind of a long time. You know,
and a guy throws a huge block party, chops off his nose.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not to say that Kanaan has, you know, never blocked anybody else or anything like that. I mean, I think, you know, like I said, I think in the heat of the moment, it was, you know, in the heat of the moment.
That was egregious. I mean, that was, wow, you don't get much more blatant than that.
Yeah. I don't know. Well,
so,
just...
No, I stand by him. I think he had absolutely every right to be just mad as hell about that.
Yeah. So, but then
with a lot less violence than I would have.
And then we moved into what was the post day after, basically, and that was Justin Wilson being penalized $7,500 and 5 points for running illegal bodywork on the that actually gave more downforce to the car he ran
and more rear stability.
Yeah, and so. A lot of controversy out of that. A lot of drivers were upset. A lot of fans were kind of felt cheated that, you know, that he had won the race with that part and thought that the race maybe should have been taken away from him.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll be careful to say that, you know, it was wrong and obviously it was an illegal part. So sure, I think that, yeah, he should have been excluded from the results, much like we do in the WRC, you know, when we find a part that's, you know, even if it's like 0.05, you know, or 0.005 out of the regulations, you're, you're excluded from the results. Ask Mikko Hirvonen. And I think that he should have been maybe excluded, but at the same point in time, I thought that, the question is how much performance advantage did he enjoy because of this, I guess, is the big question.
Well, enough to win him the race, I think. If he hadn't had that part, he would not have been as comfortable with his car, and he would not have been in a position to take the victory.
Hmm.
Now, that's not to say that he wouldn't have had a really good finish. I think he would have. But I think you're looking at 4th through 7th instead of 1st through 3rd type of finish.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. They made these changes, set out a bulletin. Jan Beekes gave a great explanation to his pre-race about here's all these little bits and pieces. Here's what they do. Here's how much downforce they produce and all this kind of thing. It was great. I ate it up being a tech guy. But anyway, then all of a sudden we find, Coyne left those on and they get a slap on the wrist because you get $50,000 on top of your leader circle money.
Mm-hmm.
You get $50,000 for winning the race. And you get 50 points, championship points.
Mm-hmm.
You subtract off 7,500 and 5 points. That's still a huge profit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to leave those parts on every single time.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that Coyne did this on purpose. I don't know. I'll give the team the benefit of the doubt. I mean, it's something that you bolt on as part of your regular race prep, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do that. You should be doing this so much that it's habit. It just happens automatically. And so, okay, they're prepping the car for the race. They bolt all the stuff on, forgetting about the bulletin about what was prohibited here specifically at Texas. And it goes out and races well. And it comes back. Oh, we left those on. Okay, honest mistake, but still. It's a mistake, and the penalty that's levied, if we go with precedent from other motorsport, and I was exactly thinking of the Hirvonen incident where he won but had a small little part that shouldn't have been on there.
Yeah, the turbo was a little wider than what it was allowed to be.
Yeah, and it's not that that necessarily gave him a decisive advantage. But it was out of it was out of compliance, and so they yanked the win from him. we can talk for hours and hours about whether they should have yanked the win from Dale Coyne and Wilson, but at least the punishment, the penalty levied, has to be sufficient to discourage future infractions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thinking, I mean,
thinking not ethically, but just thinking of, purely from a very Machiavellian type of standpoint, I look at this, those parts are going to get bolted on. If they catch me with it, fine. If I can regularly make the podium, while everybody else is leaving theirs off by having a more stable, more efficient car, I'm going to do it every race, man.
Yeah, but I'm led to believe because of the backlash, I don't think we'll see. I think this one was kind of showing, okay, slap on the wrist, like everybody says, it's just slap on the wrist when you look at it. But I think from now going forward, I think that if you show up and you have that on your car, I don't think it's going to be such a slap on the wrist. I think the next team that gets caught with them, if another team does get caught with them, is expulsion from the results. And I think it has to be. I think IndyCar to stay creditable going forward. Okay, I understand you slap them on the wrist, don't run those. And, it draws the ire of a bunch of people, but be that guy I want you to. I want you to, who was it? Tim Cindric. I want you to be that guy. Or Mike Conway. I want you to be that guy to put those parts on your car and see what happens the next time, you know, you do that. I assure you that it will not be a slap on the wrist and it will be expulsion from the results.
Well,
and it would have to be.
I hope, yeah, I was going to say, I hope it. Hope it is, but then you get into then you get into the consistency argument, and you know you can't make any real arguments about the lack of consistency in rulings this year. It's been mm-hmm. very even and very consistent and very prompt. All the great things we want from race control, right?
Yeah.
And so to give Wilson a slap on the wrist and then someone else expulsion, man, you're just going to you're going to open the floodgates for another outpouring of outrage from the team owners.
Well, I think you do it this way. I think that you release a statement. I think that you say, okay, you know, the part was on the car. We fine them. You know, I think that you make the fine a little stiffer than 75. I say maybe go 15. I mean, yeah, you're still netting a profit, but I'm not going to fine a dude $100,000.
Now, I'd fine him the purse.
Yeah, you could fine him the purse. That's fine. And you could fine him the championship points if you want, or however many championship points you want. But I think you keep them the win. But I say after that, I say, hey, I release a statement that says, hey, all right, these people have lost the race purse. They were fined $50,000 and 50 championship points. And, oh, by the way, the next time that anybody does this, you're expelled. Because we, you know, because IndyCar is going to take some accountability, too, because they've botched this. They let the car run with that part on, I'm led to believe, because I don't think that's something that you would put on after race tech inspection. So I'm
something that should go on post inspection.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. If you
post inspection, that's it. You shouldn't be able to change a car.
Yeah, you should be forced to. Yeah, you should be forced to roll the car out and leave it alone.
Yeah, it should be a park fermé type of condition.
Yeah. But the fact of the matter is this: if IndyCar missed this part on the car, it's just as much their fault as it is Coyne's for running it. And so at that point, you know, you got to be careful too, because, you know, you don't want to say, oh, you don't get the win, and then have Coyne come back and say, well, why didn't you tell me about this? You know, why was I not informed that it was still on the car? Because, you know, what? Let's just say, let's play devil's advocate, if we will, and say, well, he just forgot.
Yeah.
You know, he just forgot. You know, they were setting the car up on the oval, thought it was part of the body paneling, didn't really understand it. And then, you know, they left it on the car. And then he gets fined and docked the race win. And then he's told, well, hey, they were on the car when I took it through pre-race inspection. Why didn't you tell me when I went through pre-race inspection to take them off, you know, as a reminder? I mean, you know, I obviously, you know, I just think that's what they need to do. I think, you know, IndyCar has to be careful because they jacked up. But I think the next time they need to, one, be looking for these things, and two, if they do find them, then it needs to be expulsion, because in any other form of motorsports, as we said, that is expulsion. Mm-hmm. And Mikko Hirvonen can testify, because his turbine was like 0.005 like millimeters too wide.
Yeah, I mean, it was hair's width almost.
Yeah, and he was gone. He also had like a clutch issue too, but he was expelled on both counts. Both counts would have led to expulsion according to the FIA. So that's what I think. I think that, you know, okay, you messed up this time. We messed up too. We seal up this process and make sure that we're looking for them. And the next person that does it is gone. And, you know, and just kind of roll like that. But, you know, I don't know. A lot of debate. We could go on all day about it. Let's go ahead and move on, though. Post-Texas, we've talked about Texas, the race. We've talked about the backlash after. Let's talk about some of the other news we've got this week. I mean, it's so crazy when you've got five races back to back to back, because it's news, racing. I mean, it's just constant, and I like it. But let's talk about China. China, the highly unpopular China race, has been canceled and called off. Apparently
it was not popular with the Chinese either.
Yeah. Apparently, it was only popular with one guy who signed the deal and was going to send the money. And then when the rest of the public found out about it, it was all of a sudden not cool anymore. So the China round is off. We will not be going to China. We will not. That pretty much puts an end to our international flavor. I don't count Canada because they're attached. But we will not be going overseas to race unless it's to Europe. But that's nearly like 0% chance of happening. I put on Twitter. I don't know if you've seen it. I thought it was funny. I said that the to be announced events are kind of like sitting and daydreaming about what you do if you won like the $300 million Mega Millions.
Oh yeah.
Everybody's got awesome ideas of what they want, but none of them are gonna happen.
None of them have the cash to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's kind of what we're running into.
Because wouldn't it be cool to see us running at Rockingham?
It would be cool to see us running at Spa.
Oh, that would be cool too.
And I think
I think a European oval would be really neat.
That'd be really cool. That would be unique, actually. You know, because the Europeans, they don't do ovals as much as us.
No.
But good idea.
Get the Italians to resurrect the Monza oval.
Oh God. That would be a nightmare. That would be just a nightmare.
What a death trap that thing was.
But all right. Well, going forward, let's talk about some of the places that have that you may have heard, and I'll obviously talk about the obvious ones.
Monza is off.
Huh?
Monza is off.
That's I don't think we're gonna do that.
Okay.
No, but if we look at it, we have. We have, obviously, I think one of the ones that a lot of people want to see kind of have the pack lead, as it were, was Road America. Road America, you know, everybody said, oh, well, they go to Road America that weekend. Because apparently, when they were talking with Road America the first time, that was one of the places.
The weekend.
Yeah, that was the weekend, and that was the problem. So naturally, everybody... you know, put Road America up there. I'd love to see the cars at Road America. I've heard Mazda Laguna Seca mentioned. I know that a lot of people like Laguna Seca. This guy. And
yes.
I've heard Pocono. I know that our Spike Rogan would just absolutely probably wet himself, if not more.
We would hear a huge explosion out east in Pennsylvania.
There'd be a 4.4 on the Richter scale, and it's not tectonic plates. It's Spike's head exploding all over the place. Yeah, so those are the ones I've heard. Have you heard any others that are different at the moment?
No, those are the only legit ones that I've heard is Road America, because that was kind of around the same time they wanted previously. Whether IndyCar has burned that bridge or not, I don't know. You know, the Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca, that has a lot of merit. There's been question about whether IndyCar stays at Sonoma Raceway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Infineon
Snorum
is no more, right? They've withdrawn their naming contract.
Oh, so are they back to Sears Point?
No.
Just Sonoma?
Sonoma Raceway. I'm like, seriously, what? Everybody in motorsports calls it Sears Point.
I call
that's
it Sears
Point. I know, right? That's the name of the... That's the physical name of the geographic location. Call it Sears Point. You know? Holy crap. Sonoma. All right, whatever.
Anyway.
But anyway.
Oh, Texas, too. Whether... Texas has been mentioned.
Oh, a second race at Texas?
Yes.
Yeah. I bet you dollars to pesos it wasn't mentioned by Eddie Gossage.
I think Bernard had mentioned it, and I think Gossage confirmed that he had been approached.
Yeah, it's like, he came and approached me with no money.
Mm-hmm. He's like, I ain't paying for that race. But Eddie, it's the season finale. I ain't paying for that race. Shut your mouth.
I better see cash on the barrel head before we talk.
Yeah.
With Sonoma, IndyCar might not be there for much longer, and they're thinking about moving back to the Laguna Seca from what I understand. And it's all It's hard to even call it speculation. Mm-hmm. Wild hearsay might be the proper category to put this in. But anyway, I could see them going and running at Laguna. However, one of the drawbacks of that is that that date would be very, very close to the Sears Point date. Mm-hmm. This year, I don't think that would be a good move. The best place really does sound like Pocono. They've repaved the track. They've got safer barrier all over the place. They've updated the facilities. Pit road is nice. It's ready for IndyCar. Yeah. It's absolutely ready. Let's do it.
I think it does, because I think it also has to, I think this race that replaces China has to be an oval.
Yes.
I think it does.
Well, that's Bernard's priority too, he would prefer an oval.
Yeah. I mean, it just makes sense. I mean, you've had plenty of road and street courses. They've all, for the most part, been a success, Belle Isle withstanding. And, you know, you need some more ovals. That's just what you need. I mean, it makes sense. And I personally would love to see him at Pocono. I think Pocono is an atrocious NASCAR track. But I think it is a good... I think it's a good oval for open wheel. And I think, if I remember Spike talking correctly, that it was built to be an open wheel track anyways.
Yes, it was. And what I like about the Pocono Raceway is that it's unique, right? It's a tri-oval.
Yeah, triangle type thing.
You can get the car set up for two of the three corners, but never for the full course. So you're always making setup compromises, which is great. When you want to create separation, when you want to create good strategic battles, you know, cat and mouse type of battles between drivers and cars.
Mm-hmm.
One driver getting a run through one corner that his car is really well suited for, but losing ground in another one, and seeing that chess match develop as the different drivers explore discover their own strengths and weaknesses around the course and find ways to exploit the strengths and weaknesses in their opponents. That's the thing that I really dig about oval racing. It's not the giant side-by-side stuff. That does have a level of excitement to it, right?
I mean,
we all love the Firestone Freedom 100 this year because of that. I mean, it was insane. But... really, the thing that really strikes me about oval racing, what I really enjoy out of it, is seeing that chess match develop.
Mm-hmm.
And watching drivers set each other up, and just the jockeying for position, and it's fantastic. And I think Pocono would be a perfect place for that. Whether we go this year or not as a replacement for the China race, man, I really hope we get back there soon. I think it would be outstanding.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's what we have for the China situation. I'm happy.
Yeah, maybe instead of Angstead, we should have set Nixon.
Good God. Anyways, enough of that.
you youngins, look it up on Wikipedia.
Indeed. Well, let's talk about Milwaukee as we now head into Milwaukee, and then we'll get to your Firestone.
Head to.
Well,
we're already there,
yeah,
man.
You're already there. Yeah, we're heading down that way time wise. So let's just put it that way.
I checked in this afternoon.
So it's it's Milwaukee time. Issues Milwaukee last year. Everybody complained about wanting it back, and nobody showed up. This year, Michael Andretti and the Andretti promoting group have taken over to promote the race, and there seems to be some excitement drummed up about it. Certainly, much more than what we are used to hear, or at least what we heard last year. Last year, it just kind of happened.
Yeah.
This year's a little bit better. Milwaukee. So, does the race do better than it did last year?
Yes, it does. And I think a lot of it has to do with the promoter. There were a lot of issues and a lot of areas where we saw the ball dropped on the promotion side. this year, Andretti Sports Marketing, this is a newish company, but Andretti is not new to race promotion, right?
Yeah.
Back when it was Andretti Green, before Green Savoy split off to do the promotion stuff, and Andretti did the race stuff. But anyway, so they're not new to this. They know how to do this and do it right. And it all looks like it's happening right this year. They've had a lot of stuff happening out in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Drivers and some cars were downtown Milwaukee this evening, and or this afternoon, I think. But anyway, they were down there and saw some pics pop up on Facebook. Looked like a good time. And as I bought tickets, I'm buying three times as many tickets this year as I bought last year.
Whew, so that's already an impression. That means that there's going to be six people.
Well, no, I'm buying a ticket for myself. I'm going to be down on the track shooting.
Uh-huh.
But brought our niece and her friend along and try to make a new convert to IndyCar racing.
Well done, sir.
So anyway, as I was buying tickets, I noticed that they were already starting to fill up. Yeah, and I mean, there's still plenty of tickets left. I don't think we're going to see anything like a sellout. But, I mean, we're going to hear something more than just crickets as the cars go around, you know. Mm-hmm. Last year was abysmal. It was bad. I think there are more people at the at that last Kansas race, and that was horrendous. So I can't think that it could go anywhere but up. But just from looking at the buzz that's being created here in Milwaukee, and from just looking at what seats were still available, which seats had been already taken and purchased, I think we could see probably about double what we saw last year. So the place holds, what, 50,000, something like that?
I think something about like that. Not 100% certain.
I think you see 25 to 30.
That'd be a huge upgrade.
Well, it'd be about double.
Yeah.
Be about double.
Yeah, it shall be interesting. I think the race has been promoted much better. I actually know about it this year, as opposed to last year, where I was like, oh, yeah, that's this weekend. But, yeah, I'm really excited to see what we do going forward with the race. Obviously, the on-track product is sound. I'm not really concerned about that.
No, not at all.
Just the attendance, I think, again, is the big draw here. And going into the race, I mean, let's talk about this. We were supposed to talk about after Texas, and I forgot about it. The fact of the matter is Honda won again.
Yeah, they did. Well, they didn't just win. They won first and second, right?
And, yeah, first and second, yeah.
And so, man, I'm thinking, you know, what is this? We've got Justin and Graham, and Dixon was in the lead until he crashed out.
Yeah.
And so that could have been a Honda 1-2-3.
Yep.
I think Chevy has every right to be a little steamed here. And, you know, they've been saying that, well, no, you could have made an upgrade if you wanted to. And it's like, well, could they have? I mean, everything we were hearing was that, no, it's been homologated, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I didn't think that they were allowed to do anything else with it.
Yeah, I thought that was it. There's your engine. So, anyway, and I guess now we're hearing that they can do... they can do upgrades to the engines as the miles expire on them.
Hmm.
And apparently Lotus is go ahead and just taking 10 grid penalties.
Like, we're going to start last anyways.
Yeah, to upgrade their engine. You know, like how much further back are they going to go, you know?
Yeah, you've already hit the bottom.
So.
Yeah, it was interesting. I thought it was really interesting that nobody had mentioned that going into the race, or, you know, or leaving the race from Texas. You know, nobody, you know, and again, that's what I'm thinking, kind of the same that you, same thing you were, you know. Chevrolet's probably like, what the heck do we have to do to win a race? We dominated before, and now we can't do anything. But I think that this week, and I hope that my predictions show this, because I kind of forget already who I picked, but I think that Chevrolet returns. I really do. Because who did I pick in our podium? To win.
Let me see. To win, you had
Dixon.
Dixon.
Nah. Well, I guess
PK
I'm wrong.
And Ray Hall.
Okay. Well, man, maybe I should go back and change my pick. But you know, because I think after thinking about it a little more, I think, you know, this should be the week that we see Chevrolet kind of make a comeback. And I, you know, I'm almost willing to change my pick. Granted, I don't know if it'd be TK that would win. But you know, it would be. I think that this is a great time for Chevrolet to strike back. So,
I don't think it's going to happen here, though. I don't even think it's going to happen at Iowa. I think it will start to happen when we get to the when we get back to the twisties.
Mm-hmm.
So when we start the Canadian swing.
So maybe a Chevrolet win in Toronto.
So we get up to Toronto, and then to Edmonton, I think we could really see a Chevy win. So anyway, I think Mid-Ohio would be a track that would benefit the Chevys as well. So
yeah.
Anyway, I think it's still Honda at Milwaukee and at Iowa. I don't think things change until we get to Canada.
Nice. Well, let's go ahead and talk about our picks for this week. I've got, as you've just said, I have Scott Dixon, Tony Kanaan, and then what, Graham Rahal?
Yes. Dixon, Kanaan, Rahal. First out is Jakes.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, yes. First out was Jakes. And nothing against Jakes. He's been running pretty good here recently.
Yeah, he has been.
I just think that there's going to be some kind of shenanigans back there that's going to cause him to.
Well, he's habitually in that danger zone area, right?
Yeah.
You know, mid pack. Is it race start gets crazy and well, Milwaukee's what bank 9 degrees?
Nothing.
Like that, it's pretty flat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty easy for mistakes to happen on cold tires.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's a good pick for first out.
All right. Well, who do you got?
All those people.
I know, this is the weirdest thing. This is the weirdest thing. We're talking before the show, making our picks, so we don't spend the whole time going, I don't know who's going to win. And as he's going down his list of picks, he picks everything exactly, well, not exactly in the same order, picks the same top three drivers and the first out, and I hadn't even said what I was going to pick yet. It
that
was
bugged your house.
I know, it's kind of weird.
Mind-reading bugs.
Yeah, I'm going to, like, scout the house and make sure there's no weird cameras or anything in here.
Find some MIB looking kind of traption.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so no, I've got Rahal to win, Dixon to place, and Kanaan to show. I would love to see Kanaan win and the others behind him, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think Rahal does pull it out and get his first win for Target Chip Ganassi Racing. And Jake's first out.
Yeah. Then we will be interested to see what happens with Mr. Mike's picks. They'll be in just in time for us to ridicule him next week because he loses.
He'll have to climb to top of a Ranger tower.
Yes.
And hold his phone up as high as he can with a piece of tinfoil on one foot so he can get reception.
Exactly.
In Texas, his picks.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see what happens. All right, so we'll open up the floor for you for a I think this week. Yeah, I've been on the show for a while.
Oh, you're going to give me 35 seconds?
I'll give you 15 seconds for Mazda Road to Indy. Now, go ahead. Mazda Road to Indy is yours, sir.
Well, not a whole lot going on this week.
All right, you're done.
Nope.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
You know, no one raced at Texas. That's a venue that traditionally the Firestone Indy Lights series has not raced at. And Firestone Indy Lights will be at Milwaukee. Last year, we had the full squad, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had USF 2000 all the way through to IndyCar, and it was fantastic. It's a shame not more people were there to see it, but that was also a full weekend event, Friday through Sunday. This is 1.5 days. It's a full packed schedule on Friday, and then about half a day on Saturday, really light, PR type stuff and autograph session in the morning, race at noon, go home, which that's cool. I kind of like the schedule, but it does mean you don't have enough time for some of the other support series. So the Firestone Indy Lights will be there, and that's it. That'll be it. And let me, I thought I had the schedule in front of me. I can get it real quick. They will be qualifying at 11:45. This is Central Time, so Central Daylight Time. 11:45 is Indy Lights qualifying tomorrow, and then they'll race 6 hours later. So at 5:45 that evening, Friday evening, tomorrow evening, they will be taking the green flag to race 100 laps around the Milwaukee Mile. And then, of course, the IndyCar race is on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Last year, this is where all that brouhaha went down between O2 Racing, Mark Olson, and in IndyCar, with Peter Dempsey pulling into the pits, not taking the green flag. Ended up only 8 cars contested that race. I kind of suspected that we would see similar numbers this year, mm-hmm. especially given the carnage that we saw at Indianapolis and some of the carnage that we saw at Belle Isle.
Yeah.
And, we do not see UNESCO racing here this weekend. I don't know. I'd have to do some digging and see if that was by design, if they'd just not planned on running Milwaukee anyway. But anyway, they are not here, but there are a couple of people who are here that weren't previous. Mike Larrison,
mm-hmm.
who's really an oval guy. He races he raced the midgets there at Lucas Oil Raceway the night before the 500, before he was unfortunately wadded up into the wall. In that midgets race, but anyway, he will be running with Bilardi Auto Racing in the number 19 car. So Bilardi adds a third car. Goncalves is back in the number 4. So they'll have 3 along with Alonde, who's really really been fantastic last couple of races.
Mm-hmm.
Alonde has really been someone to watch. It's been pretty pretty fantastic. Of course, you're going to have the foursome from Sam Schmidt with Carbonet Webb, Guerrieri, and Boitier. Let's see. FanForce United is going to run Brian Clausen.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So Brian will get a ride there in the Indy Lights car. Stepping down from his IndyCar ride at the 500 with Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing. But anyway, so he did really well here last year with Sam Schmidt. Be interesting to see what he does with the Fanforce United car. Getting these cars to run on an oval, it takes some deep, deep knowledge of getting that last tenth out of these machines. That's one of the reasons why Sam Schmidt does so, so well. Team Moore will have their pair, Gustavo Yakiman, David Estella. And let's see, Jeffrey Mark Motorsport with Juan Pablo Garcia. And and Andretti Autosport, of course. How am I forgetting that? Andretti Autosport and with AFS Racing with Carlos Munoz, who had a fantastic last couple of races, and Sebastian Saavedra, who has really struggled the last couple of races. You know, if Saavedra wants to stay in the championship hunt, he needs to win this race. Pure and simple. He needs to win. He can't continue to run where he has been and remain a championship contender.
Agreed.
And, you know, this is a track where Gustavo Yakiman could do very, very well. I would not be surprised to see him take the win. I really wouldn't. He's won, or he's done very well on ovals before. His first podium, I believe, was at Iowa. And so, and he did very well at Indy this year. It looked like he might have won it, but fell back there at the end. So I think Gustavo is my pick for the win. Vautier, especially Guerrieri. You know, if Yakiman doesn't, I think Guerrieri is going to. He was last year's pole sitter and winner, and was just lightning fast around this track. So, a couple of quick notes from the Star Mazda world. Well, actually, just one note from the Star Mazda world. And really, I guess this extends more to just Star Mazda. TrueCar, as we all know, has been deeply embedded into motorsports and supporting women in racing to strengthen their, as they call it, the Women Empowered Initiative that TrueCar has right now, in addition to their sponsoring Gustavo Meneses. We've still got to give him crap about that. But, hey, you know, like we said, who was it? Wade Cunningham had the her car, that pink car. Yeah, pink race car. It's still a race car. I'm still going to drive the thing. But anyway, Catherine Legg, of course, is their driver in the IndyCar series, and she just got the. I don't know if we mentioned this after. After the 500, but she has now the Girl Scouts of America sponsoring her as well. The nice badge on her helmet. but anyway, Richard Branson and the Virgin Group has stepped in to partner with TrueCar and their Women Empowered. Stop that.
Professional.
And so, you know, keep in mind that there's a lot of drivers that this will affect. You've got Catherine Legg in IndyCar. You've got Ashley Freeberg in Star Mazda. Shannon McIntosh in USF 2000. Shea Holbrook runs in the SCCA Pirelli World Challenge series, and Emily Tomovich in the Mazda MX-5 Cup. Have you ever seen a Mazda MX-5 Cup race?
Yes, I have.
Those are fantastic.
Yeah, I'd like to compete in one.
they get kind of vicious.
They do.
anyway, so you got sport car, production car, open wheel, and rally.
Yes.
Verena May in Rally America, racing her TrueCar sponsored Ford Fiesta. Looks fantastic. By the way, Tom Turk got some really nice shots of Verona May out on the stages there at Susquehannock. So be sure to check it out there on our photo gallery. Tom had some really, really nice shots from the rally.
Nice. All right. So is that all we have for the Monster Road Indy?
That's it.
All right.
Star Mazda and First Identity Lights will hit the track in Iowa, but until then, that's it for now.
All right. Well, we also had we also have on the site, if you go over to openpaddock.net, we had our very own Kevin Neely had a little write down Q&A here with Ryan Briscoe from Team Penske. So talking about how hard it is for Ryan to be sitting kind of behind his teammates who both have wins this year. But really Briscoe's best chance comes on these ovals. So good read, actually. I read it earlier. Very nice. So head on over there and check that out. And for our motorsports kind of medley, as it were, we had two other events to talk about. Lewis Hamilton wins the Canadian Grand Prix. it's pretty good. It's a pretty good race that was.
Oh, it's a fantastic race.
With the various strategies playing out. And we also had the second round of the Global Rallycross Championship at Texas, where Marcus Grönholm in the Best Buy Ford Fiesta led a Ford Fiesta 1-2-3, actually.
Yeah.
With
Ford dominated.
Yeah, with Tanner Faust finishing second, and how about Brian Deegan in third in his Fiesta? That's a great run considering some of the names that you have in this event. You had Pastrana and the really piece of junk Dodge Dart. Kim Block and his Fiesta. You also had people like Mira, Liam Dorham. There's the names, Reese Millen. I mean, there's just a ton of people in this. And so for Deegan to take a third place is exceptional work by Mr. Deegan. Very happy for him. And that's right on the heels as we now prep for X Games coming up.
Guess who's coming to X Games?
Is it confirmed or is it a challenge?
It's confirmed.
So there is...
I saw a teaser shot of his car on Citroën's Facebook page.
On Citroën's Facebook page, you say? So you know for
a
fact...
Well, hang on. I saw it on... let me back off of that. I saw a picture. And let's see. Was it on the... Yes, it was. Yep. They're on their World Rally Team Facebook page. I knew I saw that. A nice little teaser shot of the DS3 XL that Sebastian Loeb will be driving at the X Games. How huge is this? So, okay. We looked at this Rallycross thing when it first came out here in the U.S. running there New Jersey Motorsports Park and thought of it was kind of weak sauce, right?
Yeah.
And apparently they have tweaked this, they have worked on it, they've massaged it, and people that Bob Williams, whom we met at Texas a couple years ago and provided us a nice little article last year on his fan interaction, his experience there with the fan club. He was down there this year again and said that the Rallycross was really amazing. He really loved it.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I think they're starting to get this thing together. They're starting to go to some venues where they can get some eyeballs on this. And, you know, now you're attracting Block, Pastrana, Deegan. You're attracting Rallycross champions, Faust, Tanner Faust. And now Marcus Grönholm. I mean, what a rally legend.
Yeah.
Marcus Grönholm.
Yeah, here
it is. And then the 7-time world champion.
Eight
times world champion, Sebastian Loeb,
yep.
to come compete in Global Rallycross at X Games.
Yeah.
Man, that's huge.
Yeah, that is a massive, that is absolutely a massive announcement, and a huge coup for the X Games and Rallycross, really, to pick that up. So I can't wait, because I'm pretty sure that Loeb is going to kick the shit out of everybody at X Games.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's just something about that guy. It's what he does. So, all right. Well, that's all we have for this week. I do appreciate you joining me on kind of a short notice, Doug. I know we all talked about recording before, and then I never got back to you. Moving of the paddock. This is the first show in the new paddock HQ, so it's kind of comfortable. A wee bit chilly in here, but not too bad. And don't forget this weekend, 24 Hours of Le Mans. Watch that, enjoy that, live that when you're not watching Milwaukee festivities. So, all right. Well, Doug, do you have anything else to say?
No, that's it. Off to take photos tomorrow and Saturday, so keep checking the site. I'll try to get them, get some reduced and uploaded as fast as I can.
All right. Well, everybody, enjoy the weekend. Thank you for listening to the Open Paddock Podcast, and we will chat with you, hopefully, on Tuesday at our regularly scheduled time. So have a good night. Say good night, Doug.
Good night, Doug.